Hi, this is the second of the two podcasts recorded at the annual STEG conference that we have selected for you. To find out more about STEG and discover more of the podcasts, visit its website at steg.cepr.org. Welcome to another podcast recorded at the 5th annual STEG conference held in the Economics Department of the University of Oxford. My name is Tim Phillips. STEG is a research initiative that aims to provide a better understanding of structural change, productivity and growth in low and middle-income countries. A public transport system means very different things in different parts of the world. In developing and emerging economies, public transit is often provided by private operators and, well, if you've ever tried it, it can seem pretty chaotic. Does it require large or small policy tweaks to make it work better? And what would those tweaks be? These are questions that Lucas Conwell of UCL asked himself when faced with Cape Town's public transit minibuses. And now, I'm going to ask him what he discovered. Hello, Lucas. Welcome.
Hi, Tim. Thanks a lot for having me on the podcast here.
This is all about this minibus transport that you get in developing countries everywhere. And for anyone in the audience who has never used these minibuses, never crammed into them, explain how the whole system works.
Yes. So in the context that I study in Cape Town and also in many other countries in the developing world, you have really this almost miraculous network of minibus or other informal transport routes connecting not only the city center to outlying suburbs, but often suburbs and townships and informal settlements directly with each other. And so really a dense web of connectivity, and each route's run by an association or a collective of minibus owners. And they're often quite organized. And so even though it's sometimes called informal transport, That doesn't necessarily mean that it's really every driver for themselves. And so say in Cape Town, these routes, they often start at a bus station or what they call a taxi rank in Cape Town. And there, say, I'm a passenger. I want to take a minibus from the CBD to the township of Mitchell's Plain. You know, I would go to the bus station in the CBD, and then there would often be on a busy route a long queue of passengers waiting to get on a minibus. And so I joined that queue, and then at some point there would be a minibus arriving to load passengers and another one. And finally I get on board, and then, well, if it's a really busy route, then the bus leaves right away, and that's great. But on other routes, a problem people often have is that the buses only leave when they're full. And So if there aren't many passengers on my route, then I might have to wait a long time just sitting on the bus for it to fill up and actually depart out of the station. And then the buses in Cape Town and in many other places typically head pretty directly and efficiently to their destination, say taking highways. And so once you get on board, once the waiting is over, it's really a pretty efficient mode of transport that can take you from anywhere to anywhere for an affordable price at almost any time of day.
I've taken these in 3 or 4 cities. I imagine that there are very many more. How common is this around the world?
Well, in developing countries, the statistics are somewhat thin that allow you to make these kinds of comparisons. But from what we have, we see in, especially in sub-Saharan Africa, they usually account for around 50 to 100% of all the shared urban transport. So if you've got all buses and trains where they exist, then at least half of these are these privatized shared transit operators. And in many cities, you may have no government-run transit at all.
Yeah, and that's my question. Why are these necessary? Why do we have them at all?
Well, I think about it in 2 ways, really. First, in terms of the geography of cities, particularly in sub-Saharan Africa, cities are often quite low density and quite sprawling urban environments. You may have very high density settlements, slums far from the city center, and that means that the demand for transit is also quite dispersed. Mm-hmm. And so this kind of small-scale mode that requires little infrastructure is quite well suited to this urban geography, that it's profitable to have these routes connecting outlying suburbs, even if there are only a few commuters every day taking these routes, as opposed to, say, building a metro, which would require large amounts of passengers on one route to justify those fixed costs. And the other component is that this is a mode of transport that can thrive in environments where city and national governments have low fiscal or state capacity, where they would struggle to raise the funds to invest in heavy infrastructure. This mode really requires either minimal or no infrastructure or even regulatory oversight at all to work.
Now, it obviously suits commuters up to a point because they use them, and it obviously suits the minibus operators because they decide to put the services on. No one's forcing them to do it. But what are the disadvantages of having a system like this?
Perhaps I've painted a somewhat rosy picture so far of the system. There are certainly many complaints that the users have. Those vary a lot from city to city, but certainly common ones, which often raised in Cape Town, the waiting in line, either in the queue to board or then on board for the bus to depart. They often call it the fill and go model. That's something people often complain about, that maybe there's an undersupply of buses due to regulatory factors or other government intervention. And then the other big piece is what you experience, what I think of as quality. So whether that's comfort on board, maybe that they pack twice as many people as seats these buses, that's not necessarily from sort of our perspective as economists, just the fact that it's uncomfortable doesn't mean it's inefficient, but that said, it very likely might be. Then crime can also be a big concern, not as much on the buses as in the stations if you're waiting around and it's a high crime neighborhood, and certainly also driving safety, the driving style, let's say, of the drivers is something that looms large in the public imagination.
Yeah, so we would like to make these systems more efficient, but if we did make them more efficient, who is really benefiting?
Well, the existing users tend to be at the lower end of the income spectrum in many cities where these minibuses exist. It's really a bifurcated transport system. Either you take the minibus or you buy a car and drive. And so any policy that improves this privatized transit is going to be a very pro-poor policy, one that makes the cities work better for, say, newly arrived migrants from rural areas. Many of these cities are rapidly urbanizing. You have these people who end up in slums on the fringe. And these are the people who would benefit most, who have long commutes, who have no other option besides these minibuses, and no income to afford their own vehicle. And so it's certainly a policy that you could think of as making developing country cities more equal.
Okay, so to work out what people think and what can be done, how do you collect the data on how well the system is working? You need to measure that. And also, what people would prefer?
You know, the way in my work I ended up doing this was surprisingly low tech in the sense that it was really just a great team of enumerators. I had 12 students with clipboards and sheets of paper in their hand, and we had to collect data on both the supply and the demand side of the market. And so it was really involved separate efforts. So to track the supply of minibuses, we had these enumerators at the stations really just observing how many minibuses come in, how many people board them, how long is they just going down the queue and counting the number of people every 5 minutes. You know, I'm very thankful they were willing to do that for 4 hours straight. And so that was really the old school, you're just counting minibuses. And then to get an idea of how much people value these different factors, quality, travel time, we conducted what in economics is known as a stated preference survey, which allows you to quantify how much people value different improvements, say, to the minibus system, without just directly asking them, say, what would you be willing to pay for security guards at stations? Because, I mean, if someone came and asked me this question, I would have no clue what exact dollar amount I would pay for that kind of intervention. But in these stated preference surveys, instead, you present people with hypothetical options. Say, in my case, you say, do you want to take minibus A or minibus B? And minibus A has security guards and takes 20 minutes, but minibus B has no security guards and is cheaper, but takes 40 minutes. And then based on what people tell you that they prefer out of these hypothetical options, you can then go in and based on some basic economic models, you can calculate the dollar value that people place on travel time versus, say, these improvements to the quality of their commute. And this is what allowed us to quantified the value of some of these options like security guards or drivers who follow the speed limit, neither of which really exist in Cape Town at the moment.
So you modeled this to try and work out how the system might be improved. What do you consider in that model?
Well, in terms of the basic modeling ingredients, the most important is that I have a model of the supply of minibuses where for each route, there is a minibus collective or association which chooses how many minibuses it will allocate to the route in order to maximize its profits. And then I have what we call a queuing model, and this is more taken from a math where that basically represents this kind of, well, naturally represents a queue as the name would imply. Mm-hmm. And then this queue combined with the number of people from the demand side of the model choosing to take minibuses, and then the supply of minibuses chosen by the local association, this then allows you to calculate, to predict how passengers' waiting times on different routes will change in response to these kinds of policies, such as minibus formalization programs that subsidize additional buses to enter, or say the provision of security guards. And the key here really is that my paper, relative to a lot of the existing work, which more takes transportation costs as fixed, here the idea is that, well, if in response to any policy which directly targets this privatized market, their decisions on supply are going to change, and that'll directly impact how costly, in terms of time, people's commutes on these minibuses are. And that's what I aim at capturing in my model.
As you say, this is a sort of semi-informal system in the way it works. But one thing that is informal is that no one has actually made a plan for how to do this efficiently. And so what are the big inefficiencies in the way the system operates that you find?
Well, through the lens of this economic model, there are actually too few buses on almost every route, and
right.
That's in part because of the structure, how the market works, that the city gives one of these associations the exclusive right to a route, and then they function as a quasi-monopoly, and so they don't allocate as many buses to the route as would be optimal in order to maximize the utility the commuters derive from the commute, in order to really give them the least possible wait time that can be efficiently provided. And at the same time, passengers also impose a form of externality on each other that when I choose to take a minibus, of course, I add to the queue and then add to the waiting time of the people who come after me, and I also don't take that into account. And so it turns, on the other hand, I also do help the bus fill up faster. And like we were talking about at the start, you know, that's a good thing for everybody else because once the bus is full, it leaves, we're done waiting. And so all of this leads to the fact that in Cape Town, there are actually both too few buses and too few passengers. And so then some of the recommendations that come out of my work exactly target at solving this undersupply and under demand, if you will, that if the government were to implement a kind of formalization contract where they set the fares for the minibuses and then subsidize the associations to add additional buses, you could decrease passengers' wait times, and the benefit would exceed the cost of, say, paying the drivers to run those additional buses. You would have more buses, so people would wait less in the queue, and you have more passengers, so the buses fill up faster. And at the end, everyone benefits from a policy that, compared to, say, building a metro line, requires much less state and fiscal capacity.
So, Lucas, you're the policymaker now. Set out this policy for me. What would happen under this policy?
Well, the city of Cape Town, say, would keep its current structure where one of these associations gets the right to each route, but they would exercise more control over what actually goes on that route. A bit like you were talking about before, about the city acting as a planner to make this all better planned out. You would have the city telling the minibus association exactly which prices they can charge, and those prices would be chosen in such a way that they would induce just the right amount of demand to optimize wait times. And then these subsidies the city would provide would also then induce the associations to add more buses. So it's really just a slight upgrade of the existing system. You would need a bit more oversight to make sure those exactly correct fares are charged. You would need some form of ticketing, either paper or digital, to track how many passengers are being carried. But that's something that's been done in other cities like Dakar in Senegal, I believe. And so that's something which would require only a relatively small investment. The other recommendation that I make is that there's a huge benefit from adding security guards to these minibus stations. And this is based off of the willingness to pay of commuters for this kind of security against crime that I derive from this stated preference survey I was talking about. And so on the one hand, in this, call it, ideal minibus system, you would have more buses on most routes, also more passengers using them, and then you would have these security guards to address what is clearly a major barrier to commuting, this risk of crime. This, you know, in Cape Town, is not a problem exclusive to minibuses or minibus stations, but given that people spend a large amount of time in these crowded public spaces, that's one area where crime concerns are particularly acute.
So on one hand, this is quite encouraging because this is tweaks to the system rather than having to abandon it and set up something entirely different. How much benefit can you get from these policies? Can you quantify that?
Yes. So when I simulate these policies in my model, then we find net welfare gains that are in the same league as the net of cost gains that people often find when they study building these infrastructure expansions that I've been mentioning, say building what we call bus rapid transit, these kinds of large buses with their own stations and lanes run by public authorities or from Metro Line. So those kinds of interventions generally do have a larger effect on commute times, but they also come at a much higher cost. So when you take the benefit net of cost, then it ends up looking quite similar to this around the edge, if you will, optimization of the minibus system.
I see. So this means this might be quite popular with anyone who's involved in providing urban transport at a government level, because there's not someone saying to them, what you need to do is invest billions of dollars in transit systems.
Right. I would certainly hope so. To date, we haven't seen as many of these efforts which could broadly be collected under the umbrella of minibus formalization. The city of Dakar in Senegal, I was alluding to before, has actually been quite pioneering in actually implementing a formalized concession contract on many minibus routes along the lines of what I was sketching. But otherwise, most cities, both in Latin America and in sub-Saharan Africa, have really focused on building bus rapid transit or metro lines. But I have seen an increasing awareness also on the part of international organizations of this low-hanging fruit that can be had by really leveraging the existing transit technology. I would note, though, that certainly it's not an either-or kind of question. I wouldn't advocate that cities should not build any heavy transit infrastructure, but rather that it's certainly they should start by optimizing the transit they have, addressing the most salient frictions in a given city. And then there's certainly in almost every city, even in low density cities and like Cape Town, there are some corridors where you do have the kind of dense, consistent demand that could benefit from, say, a bus rapid transit line, where maybe we're having everyone on small minibuses would lead to excessive road congestion. So in my paper, I don't make a recommendation for the ideal combination of bus rapid transit, metro, and minibus, but certainly this is sort of, if you want to talk about a full policy package, these are the kinds of options that policymakers should be considering.
And from your research, from your experience, this is the kind of structure that we see in many cities. Are your policy recommendations the sort of policies that we could implement in many of those cities?
Yes, I would argue that although the specific parameters, the specific complaints or frictions, if you will, to efficient commuting in different cities are going to, of course, be context-specific, that the overall contours of this minibus network, this informal transit system, are actually quite general. That although when we say informal transit, that often might make us think of a sort of free-for-all of individual buses run doing their thing, that in most cities, it actually is quite organized in terms of having collectives of bus operators on a given route who are centrally managed, and then also in having a government role in regulating fares or routes to some extent. And so this kind of structure is quite common. And then also the way it works on the ground, that the buses leave from designated stations, they travel on a designated route, that they wait to fill up before they leave, that crime is a significant concern, the crazy driving styles, these are all quite common features in most cities where this informal transit exists. But certainly the extent to which you have an over or under supply of minibuses and whether too many or too few passengers are using this mode in a given city will depend a lot on the level of development of a city, on the geography, and so on.
There are literally millions of commuters who would probably welcome your improvements. Thank you for talking about them, Lucas.
Thanks very much, Tim.
You can read more about this research in Lucas's paper, and it's called Privatized Provision of Public Transport. Author, of course, Lucas Conwell.